Craig Mullaney is the author of The Unforgiving Minute, A Soldier's Education. In 2003, he led an infantry rifle platoon across the hostile border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. A Rhodes Scholar, a professor at West Point, a national security advisor to President Obama, Mullaney is the brightest of the bright. So what does he think of the war in Afghanistan? Anne Strainchamp sat down with Mullaney to find out. And the conversation started not in Afghanistan, but with a story about a waitress in New Jersey.
I had just come back from Afghanistan, and I was sitting down at a steakhouse in New Jersey. And this waitress approached our table, and my dinner partner said that I'd just come back from Afghanistan. And she stopped, and she said, you know, thank you for your service. You know, thank God you were in Afghanistan and not in Iraq, that you were peacekeeping. And I sort of had to bite my tongue because my experience had been anything but peacekeeping. You know, it had been quite a difficult tour, actually. And it struck me then, this gulf of understanding between the civilian population back home and those of us who had served in Afghanistan.
I guess from the perspective of the civilian population, Afghanistan really got overshadowed by what we did in Iraq. I think civilians tended to forget that we were even still in Afghanistan.
Her reaction was completely understandable from the perspective of, you know, how far you had to sort of dig into the newspaper to find any snippet of information about Afghanistan in 2003 and 2004. I mean, it really had become something of the forgotten war as American focus shifted to Iraq.
When you look back on Afghanistan, if you were to see it in your mind, not necessarily as a sequence of words, but just as images, almost as a film with the soundtrack taken out, what would you see?
I'd see this sort of jagged ridge of mountains with the silhouette of our helicopter rotor blades racing over it like a magic carpet. And then beneath you, it looks like time stopped 1,000 years ago. And these fortifications and compounds that look almost medieval. That'd be one image. You know, another image that really sticks out in my mind is of this small girl of about 13 wearing a bright green outfit, sitting on her haunches with barbed wire behind her. And she'd come to this medical clinic that we'd set up for the day to receive care. And that was one of those moments that day where we knew we were having a direct impact on the local population, that it's such a stark contrast with, you know, a typical patrol where you're looking at everyone as a potential enemy. But this was an instance where we could let our guard down a bit. And then, of course, there are the images I wish I could forget. Sort of, one of my soldiers who's killed in action in our first major battle along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, and watching the helicopter lift off with his body in the back. I knew he wasn't going to come back.
Well, right there, that's such a confusing jumble of images. I mean, the beauty of the place and wanting to help the people, and then also being engaged in combat missions. It was a confusing tour of duty, wasn't it?
It was. So much is compressed into, you know, in our case, we were there for 9 months, and it felt like 9 years. The amount of it, of the scar tissue, and also the laughter and the joy and the camaraderie, all so densely packed. It's an experience I'll never forget.
Was it hard to be there and sort of be wearing two hats? You know, the peacekeeping hat, where you're setting up medical clinics and trying to get to know people and trying to do something good for the civilians, and then the combat hat, where you're going out and, you know, firing mortar rounds into a group of other people.
I mean, I think the way we squared those two missions in our minds was, you know, on the one hand, you're providing services and helping to strengthen the local institutions to get Afghanistan back on its feet. But until you could build up the Afghan police and the Afghan army, we also provided their security. And, you know, the dark side of providing security is, you know, killing and capturing those who seek to harm the population or seek to harm the security forces. And those combat missions were very difficult from a tactical perspective. We were operating about a half mile above Denver's altitude, and then the mountains went another 2,000 feet higher than that, and you're running around with very heavy packs, at least 50 pounds, in this rugged terrain, and your adversary is generally running around in sneakers or sandals that knows the terrain better than we did. And, you know, that they were described, the Russians used to call the Mujahideen the Duki, which is sort of a term for ghosts. And in many ways, it often felt like we were fighting ghosts. They could appear out of nowhere. The only difference between this sort of shepherd on the side of the road and the Taliban was whether he pulled an AK-47 from under his robe.
Was serving in Afghanistan your first experience of combat?
It was.
You had such an extensive military education. You know, in your book, you write a lot about it. Most of the book is really about your training at West Point and Ranger School and Army training, your years as a Rhodes Scholar in England. After all of that, were you ready?
I get this question from my students a lot, who I taught at the Naval Academy, and also from my brother, who's now 7 years behind me in the Army. And I think I was as ready as I could be. And I had sort of a premier military education and months of training for exactly the type of environment that I'd find myself in. But there are certain things you can't simulate in a training exercise. You can't simulate what it's like to lose one of your own men and to have to wake up the next day and speak to your platoon and motivate them to go back out over the same terrain. You know, nothing in training can prepare you to talk to the parents of a fallen soldier. Nothing in training is going to prepare you exactly for what a negotiation is going to be like with local elders.
Going back to that early scene you painted for us of the battle in which you lost a soldier, that soldier was a young guy who just joined your platoon. I think his name was Private O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to him?
Private Evan O'Neill, he was a 19-year-old from Haverhill, Massachusetts. He bore an uncanny resemblance to my younger brother. Both had blonde hair and blue eyes. He was a big kid, about 6 foot. I learned later that he'd applied to West Point, but had decided to go right into the Army and enlist after 9/11 because he didn't want to miss his chance to help defeat the Taliban, who he says is responsible for those attacks. And during this sort of patrol on the border with Pakistan, he was on the rightmost flank of the platoon, and his team leader, Sergeant Grenz, triggered an ambush. And in that opening salvo from at least 60 to 100 Taliban hiding in the hills, he was shot beneath his armor 3 or 4 times. And he lost a lot of blood in those first minutes. And his squad leader told me after the fact that as he was, you know, trying to apply the bandages and keep Evan alive, Evan apologized for, said, "I'm sorry for letting the squad down." And Chris McGurk, the squad leader, just held his hand and said the Lord's Prayer, and then Evan passed away. But the last thought in his mind was of his fellow squad mates. And that's the caliber of the young men who are serving in today's army. And as a platoon leader responsible for those men's lives, it's incredibly motivating. And it's an incredible privilege.
And responsibility.
And responsibility.
Craig Mullaney talking with Anne Strangeshamps. Mullaney's the author of The Unforgiving Minute, A Soldier's Education. In 2003, Mullaney led an infantry rifle platoon, the 10th Mountain Division, along the hostile border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. After leaving the military, Mullaney served as National Security Advisor to the Obama presidential campaign. The title of Craig Mullaney's book, The Unforgiving Minute, comes from a Rudyard Kipling poem. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.